Freestyling the anchor, I'm write that shit. Freestyling the anchor, anchor. Freestyling the anchor, I'm write that shit. Freestyling the anchor. Hey, hey.
Hello.
What's up? This is Ergo.
It is.
I'm Damon.
I'm Kiss, and I'm just tickled to be here.
And we're back again, just pleased, as always, to be reshaping culture for the more liberatory and creative. Who we got with us today? This is a special one. This one's unique.
It's actually a live recording from an event that we did in mid-March that was part of a convening hosted by Illinois Humanities called Inside and Out.
Shout out to Illinois Humanities. What's up, IH?
Keeping it human. Love to see it. We had the opportunity to present as part of the convening earlier in the day, and then in the evening had this wonderful conversation on stage in front of a live audience with Reginald Dwayne Betts. Reginald Dwayne Betts is a poet and lawyer. He's also a 2021 MacArthur Fellow. He's the ED of Freedom Reads, a nonprofit org that radically transforms access to literature in prisons through the installation of freedom libraries across the country. For more than 25 years, he's used his poetry and essays to explore the world of prison and the effects of violence and incarceration on American society. The author of a memoir and three collections of poetry, he's transformed his latest collection, called Felon, into a solo theater show that explores the post-incarceration experience through poetry, stories, and the timeless and transcendental art of papermaking.
We were able to bear witness and be in the audience for this transcendent performance where he broke through so many molds and standards of what performance usually is. And then with the audience was able to process with him after the show some of the themes and ideas that came up. So the questions we ask are obviously towards something you didn't see. We really recommend folks go read Felon and learn as much as you can about Betts as he goes by, because he's really a phenomenal, stellar energy.
Yeah, fascinating person. And it was a really interesting conversation. So, without further ado, from the stage of the Logan Center at the University of Chicago, here's Ergo in conversation with Reginald Dwayne Betts.
Let's get it.
Again, everyone, and thank you so much, Reginald Dwayne Betts, for that stunning performance. Beauty few would expect after prison. Let's all, if you've got to go, that's fine. If you would, though, take a deep breath. Could we all take a deep breath together? So speaking of respiration, I'm very, very honored to now welcome to join Dwayne on the stage, our friends Damon Williams and Daniel Kisslinger from Respair Media and Ergo to help us digest what we just saw. Damon Williams and Daniel Kisslinger are co-founders of Respair Media and the co-hosts of Ergo, the aforementioned weekly podcast based in Chicago that reshapes culture for the more liberatory and creative. You can find all of their work, including the conversation to come, by searching Ergo wherever you get your podcasts. We'll welcome Damon and Daniel and Dwayne for the conversation. Thank you.
Good evening. How y'all feeling? So Reg had to use the bathroom, so we're going to come out and just say what's up for a couple moments.
If I'd done all that, I'd need to use the bathroom afterwards, too. That's a good break.
I'm Damon. How y'all doing?
I'm Daniel.
If you don't mind, then, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, yeah.
So we're sitting in the space, right? Like the papers are all over the stage. We had this collective experience. What is sitting with you from what you just saw?
I mean, so much. The first thing that jumps to mind is the transparency of showing inner thoughts in front of a room full of people under lights. And it's one thing to do that, you know, in conversation when you're up here, but to have that be part of your craft is one of the things that jumps out to me. To like build that in, to have all these pages with all these words and then still make space for the words that come to you in the moment, I think was like a really interesting glimpse into the artistry. What about you?
I think for me, there was like a connection that I could feel, right? Like material is not objective,
right? It is relative. Mm-hmm. And so in this room, I know and I can feel and I see that there are so many people who are in this work and in this struggle, right? So just hearing specifics like we didn't have a microwave or heated water and demonstrating the method of how to make fire, how to make energy, and hearing folks resonate like, yes, that's true, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So that, you know, you could, this work could happen anywhere. This could happen in a museum. There could be like a voyeuristic spectator gaze. But I think the value of this weekend is that this is a convening of folks who are in the world of freedom making together, right? The world of survival, the world of resistance, and just the way I felt that interplay between the audience, between the day, between the convening, and what he brought to us on stage.
Yeah, and that work is beautiful and heavy work. And so since we have a moment before we welcome this brilliant artist back to the stage, I thought we could just take a collective breath together. You do a really good job of leading people in breath. You want to do
okay. This is your see thing. How you do that to me? Uh-huh. That's actually, no. We're,
no.
We go, everybody makes a noise.
Welcome back to the stage. Give it up. Well, first of all, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for everything you brought over this time. It was a true honor to sit in this audience and see it with this group of people. You know, we define liberation as the act of making freedom. And so I'm wondering for you, what in doing this piece on stage feels like it's part of the act of making freedom for you?
I mean, I guess in some real way, freedom is about inventing possibilities. And as an artist, if you're good, you create something that reflects possibilities for you that grow as the work grows and develops and deepens. Mm. And so in some ways, you know, I started this. I mean, literally, my guys was incarcerated. You know, if you look at the hardback book of Felon, I acknowledge men who are still in prison. And then the first paperback edition comes out, and I'm saying, look, you and you are now out. And then when the third edition comes out, it's a couple more people that have gotten out. And so literally, I mean that the production of this show and everything that went into it, including the idea of the Freedom Library, was for me a liberatory act. And it has, interestingly enough, led to actual like freedom. But then it's also led to us questioning and rethinking what we mean when we say actual freedom. Because are we saying that if you got to spend the rest of your life inside that you're not free? And I think that's like a profoundly complicated question that we should be asking in ways that's more radical than we do now.
Mm. Yeah, and so thinking of that state of making, that can happen at the height of captivity, that state of making freedom is the power of this process of liberation that we're talking about. One thing that really stuck with me from your piece that came up a few times was the process of naming. And I think naming is related to power, is related to freedom, whether that's naming experience, naming phenomenon, naming self. And so you shared with us that the name that you chose for yourself meant witness. So one, I want to thank you for allowing us to bear witness to your work and to your humanity in this full way. But I want to talk about that process of bearing witness. And Inside Outside is the name of the convening that brought us here today. And so how has the process of witnessing changed? And what have you witnessed about that space as you've gone away from it and continue to return?
Self-control tells me I should not say what I'm going to say next. I'm going to make it tight, though. Witness? I mean, look, these socks are this burnt orange. And they matched the thread on the jeans.
Whoa.
The thread, though.
I was already feeling like I was witnessing these sets.
And interestingly, though, right? I mean, it's wild, though, because I was in a prison on March 5th, right? And when I walked in, I was with my homies, and half the people there called me Shahid, and half the people that worked with me called me Dwayne, right? And I'm looking for a four-leaf clover. And somebody say, oh, what is he doing? They say, he's looking for a four-leaf clover. And you know he a fucking fool. And people shouldn't talk about you like that when you can hear them, you know? And then they laugh, you know? Look, he just laughed. We don't even know each other. Anyway, I'm looking for a four-leaf clover. And Warden, like 15, 20 minutes later, I'm still looking. We was on a prison for 5 hours. Warden said, why are you looking for that for real? Is it luck? I said, nah, man, I don't believe in luck. I went to prison when I was 16. I just believe you find what you look for. And I saw the clovers, and I was like, I'm going to find one before I leave. And so we leave it like 5 hours later. I looked down. I was like, damn, look, I told you. It's a four-leaf clover. And I said, man, this joint is going to dry out. I'm going to go get me some tape. I've never really, really taped a four-leaf clover, maybe once or twice before. And I'm on a prison. I don't have no right to be walking into somebody's office. I walk into the office like I got a right to be. I say, yo, can I get some tape? She said, I know who you are. You know who I am. She said, yeah, you friends with my friend Anthony. You know, he'd have been in here for like 20 years. I done been doing 20 years to work here. You know, I said, if he get out first, he got to wait for me and congratulate me for doing his time because I'm going to congratulate him for doing his. That's somebody I'm cool with. Like, imagine that. I had found this 40th clover and I told him. He said, wow, you look. And I said, for real, I just believe you find what you look for. And so for me, like, naming, it's about deciding to look for something that you choose. Man, I'm living in a world where I am told, one woman told me, she said, you know what you did, Dwayne? They sentenced me to 9 years in prison, and I said, I'm going to be a writer. Had never before thought about being a writer. The one burden of prison, of incarceration, is understanding that every facet of my life is tied to it. I swear, it's like a noose I put around my own neck, and that is a problem. But sometimes it feels like wings, too, you know, and it's a wild juxtaposition. And part of it comes from, I think, choosing what I'm searching for. Although, like, Freddie Gibbs got this line, man. Every time I hear it, I start crying lately, man. My son has seen me, like, cry, like, multiple times. It's like, I try to chase my dreams, but I hate the shit that I'm running after. Like, damn. I promised I was going to stay on topic, and you see that this question I have somehow started with my socks. I mean, why would I even take my shoes off on stage? What the fuck? The unction. Conjunction, junction, what's your function? Hey, all right, go ahead.
Wanted to follow up on that. To conjunct from that. You know, we're talking about this state of making freedom. You talk about naming as a choice. And one of the explicit choices that you made was to become a writer and to have this deep personal practice around literacy that from the, you know, journey you walked us through has transformed your life. And so I want to just give a space to talk about literacy much more as a freedom-making practice and praxis. And how does literacy show up in this world where our relationship to the written word and print literacy is shifting? But this is a historic multi-century tool for how we get free. So how, whether in your work with Freedom Reads or for you in your personal craft, how is literacy shifting as a freedom-making tool for you?
Yo, I knew I was going to find a way to read this poem that has nothing to do with this shit. What? I am so nice. Solstice. Give me hunger. Fuck it. Your teeth against my neck. Give me tomorrow's and yesterday's tremble in my arms, scrape nails against my skin. Give me trifling. Give me long and one more reason to return home. Hold your breath. Yo, I be in this thing, right? Where, like, I be in public, right? And I be like, yo, you want a poem? Let me give you a poem. I give it to you about anything, right? I mean, I have read poems to so many people. I tried to go into this Faith Ringgold exhibit in Worcester, Massachusetts, the place where I almost lost my mind, but that's a different story. I'm gonna tell. Let's just say something. I was leaving the place celebrating not having lost my mind, and I said, you know what, to my man who was driving me home, I'm a cat. Did I tell y'all that I'm a cat? I've fallen asleep 3 times at the wheel in total vehicles. On two, I know, right? On 2 additional occasions, my car was wrecked, not by any fault of mine, about other people, completely total, and I was inside. That's 5 total vehicles. And I still dunked the basketball at 34 years old. Anyway, things happen. And you walk away stories, and often I struggle with what the stories mean, except that you kind of figure out how to be grateful in the wonder of it all. And how not to be explaining yourself in a way that makes you feel exceptional. And not to lose yourself in your own stories in public. But it was such an enjoyable story. And I had to weigh that thing in and brag about Duncan when I was...
Nah, I mean, that's worth an applause. I mean, give it up. I want to be a little mindful of time, but I want to go to one moment from the...
I like how he just admonished me on the low.
No. I admonished myself.
I want to be mindful of time, bro. Stop this shit.
Nah. But I want to talk about one moment from the performance, which is when you describe the transformation of these articles of clothing into paper. You're speaking with almost this reverence of the process, in a way that in some ways feels similar to how you speak about the reverence of the process of writing at the beginning, but it's a different process. It's a tactile process in a different way. And so I was just watching you physically, like, in some ways miming, like holding this piece of, I think you said wire, I don't remember the exact material, with the remnants of these lives and these stories on top. And I'm wondering, as much as you can remember, what it felt like to look at these pieces being turned into something else, as much as you want to share.
You know, I mean, these guys are all in prison. I mean, like really were in prison. This isn't like a fantasy, you know. And I had asked them for their clothes because it was, again, like happenstance. And on March 4th, Luke is one of these guys that sent me his clothes. Star sent me his clothes. Julie sent me his clothes. Vet sent me his clothes. You know, on March 4th, a couple weeks ago, man. I mean, I fuck with Tyler, man, a lot, but, man, like, this dude's been in more prisons than most people in this country. We went inside, and Luke was with us. This dude got sentenced to life plus 33 years. I mean, it's strange. You know, I say all the time that I haven't had a lot of dreams in my life because, you know, when you obsess over survival, I think you don't dream too much. And yet, man, some of this shit has been, like, breathtakingly remarkable, man, you know. And I think of a moment like that that captures something ineffable. If it's a reverence that I talk about the process, it's because unwittingly I was discovering a pathway towards trying to describe something. I was in prison, and I got so mad at this dude inside that, like, he laughed, actually. I stopped telling people what the fuck is funny. You know, I was like, I'm in the penitentiary. Dude is laughing his ass off about me asking jail dudes for clothes, and I was like, yo. And then I realized that, like, I had to own, within the show, I had to own why he thought it was funny. Because he was like, why do you think what I have sweated in? It's wild because, you know, in a way, the show is liberatory in that it is enacting a kind of freedom, a set of freedoms that didn't exist before. And I swear, I had a line in it. I said, yo, I told them fools, fuck it all. Ain't nothing to resurrect after prison. And I had that in a section talking about my man Fetz. And I told my director, nah, we got to revise this show because I refuse to speak death on somebody like that. I mean, that's not my poetry that says prison. I've realized it ain't over after all. After all these years, all these rounds later, prison still ain't undefeated. He said, I stare at this landscape of gray that had become us. And I realized, after all these years, it ain't over because prison still ain't undefeated. I hold the clothes with reverence because the clothes and the process of transforming them into something else is a very argument that, like, liberation is possible.
There's so much possible. And I was going to ask you about navigating the institution through your program, but there's something that keeps coming up that's really speaking to me. And I want to talk about the possibilities of laughter, what it makes possible for you in telling your story, but also the risk and danger involved or it used as a protective mechanism, right? Like you just named right now, he laughed when you were saying, I'm about to make something of clothes. Naming, trying to build laughter as a protective mechanism is actually the space where I saw you get the most emotional in the performance. And throughout the performance, as you're telling this story, these asides, these jokes, these off the top points of levity or not, where does laughter, as you remember your time inside or as you know, proselytize or tell this story of freedom making through captivity, where does laughter show up for you?
I'm gonna tell two stories. One, like, I can't really fight, right? So in prison,
Like, you can't keep telling people that, man.
No, that's thank radical God. Transparency and honesty.
I mean, God, man, like just the thing, man. Like, this is the thing. And I just want people to understand this shit because I don't want people to try me, man. Like, I keep a knife on me. Like, I don't care where I go. You know what I mean? Not like, I'm joking. Go ahead, touch it. Yeah, go ahead, touch it. No, touch the blade, yeah. Grab it. See, I was joking. It's a toy. But that was hilarious, yo. It was so inappropriate,
a prop comic,
though.
My guy.
He was like, oh, wait, is this a visual podcast? Oh, is this like an audio podcast? You know what? I was just on the stage. I am so exhausted. Anyway, was that funny? That was funny to me. I just...
I didn't know we had props.
But no, like, so what happens, though, is like, it invites something that's radically not possible a lot of times, which is to be uncomfortable and to be surprised. I walk into Hertz, right? I'm having a horrible fucking day, right? So I say, I'm going to tell this woman a joke. I say, yo, blah, 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 blah. She don't laugh. Why don't she laugh? So I tell her another joke because I double down on humor and she still
risky
don't
maneuver.
Laugh. Yo, she looks at me and says, you want me to laugh? Buy me some diapers. Size 2A. Woo! Aggressive. I look at her. She say, I'm tired. Oh, she pregnant. I get the point. I say, I'm going to fuck you up when I bring you some diapers. Watch. I go to Walmart. I get some diapers. The first box rips open. I'm pissed off because now I can't give her no box of diapers that's already open. And if I leave those diapers there, I feel like some kind of fool. So I did two boxes. I go back to Hertz. The next day, it's before 12 a.m. It's packed in there. She don't even see me. She's like, hi, friend. I'm like, wow. I got somebody on the phone with me. Her name is Lori Gruen. She's like my best friend, right? She's listening. We talking. I said, hold up. I got to drop these diapers off. Woman says, hi, friend. She don't even see the diaper. She see the first box. She says, what? I said, I told you. You was going to laugh. Then I showed the second box. I said, look, I accidentally had to get you two because I ain't trust Walmart. So I opened the first box to make sure it was diapers in there. Then I see, I'm fucking hilarious. She calls me to behind the register, gives me hugs. See what my customers do for me. My friend Lori's on the phone. She can hear what's going on. The woman says, my kid already blessed. When he come here on March 4th, he gonna know he already loved. Yo, I fell back against the fucking wall and started weeping in a joint, man. And she said, why are you crying? I said, well, you know, like, I got out of prison like 19 years ago on March 4th, yo. And I mean, I don't know. That seemed like a roundabout way to answer the question. But check this out, man. I don't even know this woman's name. I'm just trying to tell a joke, man. It was a failed joke. So I said, you know what? Maybe I could keep a promise because a joke is a promise that I'm going to give you some kind of delight that I care about trying, at least within some bounds of respect. And so she asked me for something, and I gave it to her. And I got a story, man, that I'm going to tell for the rest of my life. And that is what humor makes possible. And it makes it possible in a way that when I talk about prison, sometimes people in the audience feel like they've learned something from my sorrow. And maybe, but I don't get anything from that. Because I know that the burden that comes with sorrow is not one that leads to action. But I think the insight and the awareness that comes with the surprise that laughter could be a conduit for, I mean, it was literally the reason why you could fall in love at the lowest point in your life. Or why you could believe that possible is possible when everybody else says that life itself is the, you know, very definition of impossible.
Beautiful. I have one last question as a follow-up to that. When you brought her the diapers, did she laugh?
Yeah, she laughed, right?
There you go.
Yeah, man.
Well, that's our time. We want to thank again Reginald Dwayne Betts for your work, for your performance, for your story. And we want to thank all of y'all for the work that you do and for showing up and bearing witness.
Thank you, guys.